We Will Not Be Tamed, a Texas Parks and Wildlife Foundation podcast that encourages all Texans to get involved in conserving the wild things and wild places of our state.
Take three. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. John Dunaway, hosting the We Will Not Be Tamed podcast down here, hunting on the border, White Wing Fields in Brownsville, Texas, for our annual little Paloma Blanca shootout. I've been hosting for a couple of years, hanging out with my good buddies, Kansas Sarton, Kyle Kokinos, Pack Mule, and Hunker Down, respectively. And so we're taking just a little midday break here while the birds are all roosted down, laying, chilling out from the sun under a shade tree. We're just going to chatter back and forth about what this event is, where it came from, why we're here now, where we hope it'll go, and the larger meaning of that, just the conservation of the state and why We Will Not Be Tamed is just such a good fit for this. So when I was about 12 or 13, my dad and his buddies were doing this all the time, and he finally brought me along, so it's like a little over 20 years ago. And I just, it was always something so enjoyable. It was like the kickoff to hunting season, right? It's like you're back in the outdoors again, and it's just a relaxing fit. You know, they grilled in the field, and they had some beverages, and they hung out. It was just so fun that I got a little bit older, started inviting some of my buddies, one here, two there, four. All of a sudden, we've got 20-plus people coming every year. And now we're seeing them, kind of like my dad brought me. I was the next generation. Kansas over here has been bringing Gunnison, that next generation, and he's seeing like how he fits in with it and watching what I hope is exciting to him, the fun that we have, and in turn the fun and enjoyment he gets out of it. You know, his gun safety, he understands being a child, he like stands back, he watches everything, he absorbs a lot. So we have to be role models in a way, and hopefully it's encouraging him to do it. So I'm always glad you bring him.
Yeah, he loves it. I mean, he counts down the days, he tells all his friends, I'm getting ready to go down to Paloma Blanco, and tells them that it's at the very bottom of Texas and we're hunting on the Rio Grande. And you know, last year I think it was, or maybe the year before, we shot a dove. He and I were standing next to one another, and the dove, as it came down, went to the other side of the river and actually landed in Mexico. And it was this weird dynamic. You know, we were both kind of like, that's crazy, our dove landed in Mexico. And you realize the realness of the border, the community across the border too. It's one thing to see it in the news and to read about it, and it's a different thing to be down here and be on it and see the livelihood, between the two countries. It's a different dynamic on the river than it is in perception for the nation, and then also just for trafficking and all those things are troublesome. And so it's interesting to hear what the locals say about it and how that affects it.
Yeah, it's like that, you know, the wall project they were doing, and they talk about that. You know, it's like it's a geopolitical line, and obviously it's got importance to how the wildlife will move back and forth and how important that is to let them keep doing that. Yeah, it's cool.
Gunnison firing. It's a heck of a shot, too. He's a crack shot.
Saw
him take down a double yesterday.
His first dove hunt was, this is his third year, so 2 years ago, was out here. And first time to really shoot one. I mean, he's been hunting with me and following along, but for him to swing a shotgun at a bird, you know, it's a different thing than sitting in a blind and holding a steady rifle, right? And so he was eight that year. And I think he shot four white wing that year with a single shot 410.
Yeah.
and then last year shot a bunch of birds, and this year he's his confidence is building. He feels more comfortable in his own skin out here and what he can do and what it's all about. And so he asked to shoot the 20.
Yeah.
And he shot that for about an hour or so, and then asked to use the 12 gauge, and so now he's shooting the 12 gauge. You know, it's funny how when we're young we want to shoot the bigger gun, and then as we get older we start to downgrade again. And there are some guys out here that are shooting a 410. You know,
yeah.
He's got a big old balloon sized bruise now on the left shoulder.
Yeah.
But I do just, you know, I didn't grow up doing this at his age. I probably didn't figure it out until about 15 or so, and I just envy the upbringing he's getting. And you know, seeing, like you're saying, all the camaraderie in the field. I mean, you're changing kids' lives here. They're They're and you're a great host, by the way. This is one heck of an event. You throw a great party, man.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, absolutely.
I called you yesterday the Gadsby of Dublin.
Oh, well, it couldn't happen without the people, right?
That's right.
I could sit here and feel by myself like, this is an amazing party.
Yeah. I think what's interesting, too, about youth is you know, just in raising our kids, we never spoke to them childishly or listened to kids' music and stuff, and so they've always acted a little bit older, but being out here and being around adults and seeing how they do it, and it requires them to upgrade their action, and, you know, we're real big on manners and yes sir and no sir and all that stuff, and so we're able to reinforce it and practice it, and he's able to be out, and I think these are life skills that you don't otherwise get unless you're around a group of men.
Absolutely.
And it's hard to say where you go hang out with a bunch of other guys for days on end, mm-hmm. you know, maybe on a fishing trip or something, but hanging out in the field where you can shoot and you can talk and you can cook and all these things. He was helping out at the grill yesterday.
Yeah, told me how to get to the Walmart this morning by a gun show. He's like talking to him like a 25-year-old man who knows how to drive a truck. Impressed, Gunnison.
But I think the conservation piece of it too is really huge, and it's, you know, how do we teach this next generation the importance of appreciating and loving the land and the birds and the animals and all the things that go into making the ecosystem work. And you know, I think it's very true. It's misportrayed in a lot of cases in media, but really hunters are the largest conservation group out there, you know. It's because we're here in the field, and so we don't just see the birds, but we see the field and the agriculture and the ponds and the work that it takes to grow produce and to care for the land, you know. And this morning we were picking up shells and cleaning up and making sure we leave it the same way. And we want, you know, I would say at this table as a group, we want this place to be remain the same as it is right now in 20 years. And I'm sure
right.
that's what Bonnie wants as well, you know, and that takes a lot of work and a lot of care and appreciation. And
absolutely. You know, and you see her kids are up there with her, right? Like they're cleaning the birds. I remember when they were tiny little kids, like younger than Gunnison, and now here they are 18. I think a couple of them are in college already. And they're following the footsteps, right? Running the farm, but they're building those relationships with people. Bonnie said to mention how proud she was. She's like, man, my son said that Kansas's kid was the most polite kid he's ever met. And I guess he just stood over there, was talking to him while he was cleaning birds or
wow.
something. You know, so what you've done carries on. And for me, it's always nice too, because here my dad brings me, I get into this, then I bring friends, and then you bring your kid. And I've got younger kids that aren't old enough to come, but like I can watch even you, what you do with Gunnison. I'm like, okay, these are the points. And just what you said, like having them here in the field, you don't have to beat it into their head. You're like, you should want to take care of this.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to do it, because we bring them and they get to see it, and they build their own inherently natural like enjoyment of it. So if you enjoy something,
yep.
you have this desire to keep it and keep it prolonged. And then it goes back in a circle, right? It's like,
that's right.
So Bonnie wants it to stay so her kids have it, and then we want it to stay so that we can come and keep getting older, and then our kids can come, and then they want to protect it.
Yep.
And then that conservation thing just keeps rolling, right? So then they invest time and money back into this, whether it's TBWF or mm-hmm. Ducks Unlimited or any other the foundations.
That's right.
And we preserve that stuff, because once it's gone, when this is a parking lot, it's not going to come back, right? Whenever
right.
you get to shoot in here again.
Yeah, this is the stuff people should be talking about more. I mean, especially in amidst all the riots and protests and all this stuff going on. I mean, kid like Gunnison growing up, and I just think more people are out in the field hunting, fishing, passing on that tradition like you are to him and like they have with this property. I mean, the world needs more of that.
Yeah.
More of that upbringing.
You know, fishing with JT last week and how he talks about it, same thing. He's very focused on the waterway that he fishes in and how he protects it. Doesn't overfish it, doesn't pressure them too much. Talked about, like, you know, guys that will run down the shoreline real close. Like, these fish will adapt. You hit one, he's not going to want to be that close to the shoreline. Mm-hmm. You hit two, and the school decides, let's get further away. And they will push themselves deeper into deeper water. And now you've changed an entire ecosystem just by your actions of not thinking about what you're doing. So you have to be mindful when you come out here, like, yeah, this is a great party, right? We all have a blast. We cook and, you know, cut up and stuff. But we also came back out here, and before we're shooting today, it's like, let's clean everything, right? To make sure that we leave this looking the way it was when we got here.
Yeah.
Because it shows them that we respect it.
That's right.
We want to be able to come back.
Yeah. First thing you said when Gunnison came and hunted with us, he said, hey, Gunnison messes up. You just treat him like he's your own.
Yeah. I mean,
he's got that gun pointed or flailing around. You smack him on the head if you need to.
Yeah.
But no, just that kind of thing. I don't have kids. I'm not married. Recently engaged, but...
Congrats, by the way.
Thank you. Congrats. Thank you. Cheers. But, you know, I admire the way you've raised him and brought him out here, and he's just one of the crew at this point.
Yeah, he loves it.
He's just
It's definitely a big deal for him.
I think you see, like, in a couple of years from now, my kids get old enough, or Gunnison gets to the point where a buddy of his gets to come,
yeah.
And then now you started another group of people.
Yeah.
And he, you know, he goes to school and he tells all these guys, like, how much fun he's having.
Yeah.
And girls, it doesn't matter, right? I've got a son and a daughter.
Yep.
And they see when I go with Nixon and do stuff, they want to go fish on the pier at the house and be involved in all that stuff. And so they tell one other person, that person gets excited, wants to see it. Maybe they've never done it.
Mm-hmm.
And they get involved. And then they tell, you know, and it naturally spreads like that. And again, you're not having to beat it in people's heads. You're not standing up, watch this PowerPoint, why you should love this.
Yeah, that's right.
Because if you have to yell it at somebody, they're just not going to figure it out.
That's right. It's too much yelling in the world.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, notice I hadn't seen many people this weekend on their phones. We hadn't had any cable. And
yeah.
I mean, we've just been so far removed from that, and I think we're pretty freaking happy.
Yeah, I would say so, too.
Heck yeah. So what did we cook up last night? We had tinny barbecue, man, in the mill scale fire.
Man, that was awesome, right? Loaded up that Fogo charcoal, mill scale running all day. Jay had quail stuffed with sausage over this incredible coleslaw salad.
Yeah.
We had, that rack of venison.
Oh, man.
Dude, ridiculous. That's the way to get them cut. Man, what a meal that was.
I'm kidding.
Wrapped it up like a little crown, those two of them.
Yeah.
Left them on the grill all day.
Don't forget the gadwall.
It's like tomahawks. Yeah. Then the gadwall.
I had about five of those tough duck breasts, and someone had one. But they're a little tough to bite in. Once you broke through the fat, they're pretty freaking good.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
But we had a heck of a day. You offered that Yeti cooler up for grabs, and
yeah.
Made me feel like a pretty special person winning that yesterday.
Hey, man, shooting. 15 birds with a box of 25 is pretty impressive.
Well, yeah, since we're on record, I only got 12. But
it was close.
Yeah, we were close. I had you breathing down my neck.
Yeah.
But got stung by some hornets trying to retrieve number 12.
Oh, yeah. That was nasty.
Yeah, that was brutal. Got about 4 or 5 on the back. But that was a heck of a party out here, man. All that barbecue and the turtle boxes playing. We had music going until about, what was it, 9:30 or something?
Oh, yeah, just hanging out in the field, right, in darkness, just chattering away, talking about it, enjoying last of that food.
Drinking some Twisted X beer out of Dripping Springs.
That's it. Good cold ones today.
Oh, man, frosty cold snacks. That's what Hunter likes to call them. I love it.
You know, when you go back to the food and conservation, and you think, you're like, okay, well, we had that venison that Morgan sent up.
Yep.
That's the one that him and I shot, or we went on that weekend hunt together. I shot one, and that's the one he shot last opening weekend at his property. So we've got that venison that he shot, and now it's being brought back, like, into the group for everybody to enjoy it. We've got those gadwall that Tanner brought. I shot down at Oyster Bayou, all the El Cap stuff. So it's like, we've all been involved in it, and then you get to bring it back and share it with people.
Yeah.
It was like last week, you know, Morgan and I went down to Oyster Bayou for opening teal, and we finished up. We're headed home, and he's like, man, you think we should cook them up, you know? Like, yeah. So he went back home, got Eli and his wife, and they came over to the house. We cooked them up like a mix between a carnitas and a carne guisada.
Nice.
Well, I was wondering why we got...
Like gadwall. Shorted?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Shorted into the stick there. I knew you had plenty of teal.
Yeah, the teal are too good. I keep those for myself. Yeah, you got to come directly to the house for it.
But that's full circle. When you know where your food comes from, it's a big deal.
Yeah.
And, you know, it comes out of the ground, comes off the land, and, you know, a lot of kids think it's just comes from a grocery store or a restaurant, you know. And
right.
It means a lot more when they know where it comes from and what it takes for it to get to your mouth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like even we get a CSA, so we get all our vegetables from them. You know, it's just like one farmer outside of Houston. He delivers it every week, and it's just fresh, right? It's coming literally from the farm in a cardboard box, gets dropped off.
Mm-hmm. Love it.
And then it's like we used a bunch of that stuff, and then a little garden at the house. Even Harper knows about it, you know, what she needs to pick and what mm-hmm. to go get. So we're doing that. I needed some oregano. She's like, can you go out there and cut some of this? She's like, okay. And give her little scissors. You know, she's out there. Can we pick these peppers? I'm like, no, don't get these on your hands. Yeah. Like, she'd be rubbing her eyes. Ugh. And she asks, like, what are these? Like, well, these are teal, you know. This is what Mr. Morgan and I went and shot today. Oh. Well, we're having hamburgers.
Yeah.
I'm like, is that the deer? Like, yeah, that's the deer. You know, so she's got this at, yeah, like 4 years old.
That is awesome.
Understanding. And she was actually out there when Morgan and I were hunting. Actually, we took both families, brought the trailers and hung out there. And the little ones played around, and Harper's like four. She rode around. We were cleaning. And that was the first deer she's ever seen, you know, hung up. Man, so she was, yeah, it was already into 2020. And she just like watched it, you know. I just stood there as a four-year-old and like, oh, it has red blood. Like, it does, you know. It was alive. Uh-huh. You don't shoot it unless we're going to use it. You know, this isn't just a sport to come out here collect them.
Yeah.
That's what I'm trying to instill at them, because they're too young to understand the greater part. But they understand. He's like, we take this, and then when we have those hamburgers or this steak that you ask for, we went and got this. And then you take care of it. You understand mm-hmm. where we got to go and play.
Right.
If you screw it up, this won't be there.
Yeah. I think it's interesting, the field-to-table movement has been really great for, you know, I guess hunting specifically, because so many people for a long time were opposed to hunting, and there was a big vocal, I mean, there still is in some parties, right, but there's that same group of people have started allowing their eyes to be open to hunting and realizing by their care of what they ingest that they can go and harvest this meat, and it's free range and it's organic and have this great life, and versus, you know, being in a process and all the antibiotics, and it's grown in a cage for consumption.
Right.
It's really opened a lot of eyes, and I've read some various stories, and I think Modern Huntsman's done a good job on some of that too, of folks that realize that they, you know, they grew up not hunting, they thought they didn't like it, and then they really started understanding food and where it comes from, and then they tried it and they were like, wow, there's this thing, and there's a connection with the land, I think, when that happens too. And
eating what you kill is, I mean, that's there's just a natural feeling about it. I mean,
that's
what we were born to do, is
that's right,
not go to a, you know, a grocery store all the time and just pick something off the shelf.
Yeah.
And the more you get into it, you know, and you're doing it, like, you understand what you've taken, and you hope that people aren't wasting it, right? It's like people that truly feel like empowered that I need to protect this land and I need to protect this wildlife and everything that goes on around it and the farmers and so forth. Like, I don't need to shoot all of these deer for the sake of shooting deer, like fill all these tags, like, because I don't have freezer space for it. And it's going to get freeze burn. You're not going to use it. And when you dial that down, now these game limits are a number that you don't always have to hit. Sometimes it's enjoyment, but like, man, I'm not going to use all of this. Mm-hmm. This is wasteful. Like, why take this out of its natural setting if I'm not going to use it? It just defeats the purpose to me of why we're going to hunt, right? Like,
absolutely.
You could stop shooting and just have your camaraderie and hang out.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and what you were saying, these field-to-table movements are so awesome because people are realizing, first of all, that it's meat. It's like, nowadays, you're like, well, we have beef and pork and chicken, and I've got to do this recipe because that's just what I've seen. Like, well, venison, elk, I mean, any of these red meats like that, like, it's meat. Mm-hmm. Anything that you're doing with beef, it might have a different fat content you got to learn to deal with, but it's meat. So, like, oh, got a backstrap, and what I eat is backstrap. Man, it's got a roast, you know?
Yeah,
and
right.
You take the shanks, and you cook this down. You're like, utilize this, and it goes so much further. And then that furthers because now you don't have to shoot as many. You're not like, oh, all I'm relegated to is a little bit of ground meat, a ton of sausage I'm going to pass off to everybody, and some backstrap. Like, man, I got the shank. I got these roasts. I've got steaks. The ribs that we had last night.
Right.
Like, literally tomahawks when we cut them off. Like
lollipops.
Eating giant, lollipops. That's
lollipops,
exactly it.
Lollipops, baby.
And man, and then you take the bones in your finish, put it in a pot, and you boil all that down with a bunch of vegetable scraps you had, and now you've got stock, and you're seeing, you know, Danielle Pruitt that runs Wild and Whole. And man, she's taking that to the extreme, like utilizing every bit, like a Hank Shaw kind of deal.
Impressive.
Yeah.
Very impressive.
Hank Shaw's books really opened me up to how to do a duck right and understanding it, you know, where I used to really enjoy duck hunting and I'd breast it out and I'd just kind of wrap it in bacon and try to grill it, you know, and leave it as red as possible. It was like, oh wow, these are all these other things, and leave the fat on, because the fat is what gives the flavor distinction for the various birds, and you know how to hang them and letting them age and these various things that I never would have thought of before. He's really opened my eyes to a lot of ways to really take care of a variety of species with the other books that he's released as well.
Ducks are a tough one to master, but like you were talking about early on when I was duck hunting, it was like always about just like bagging a lemon or holding a strap of green or just like, but there's kind of this newfound appreciation for what I'm doing and the process, and maybe only killing two or three birds and but just working your butt off for it and then bringing it to table. The best recipe I've found, though, is a pretty simple recipe from Ira McCauley, who runs Momarsh, the Momarsh Blinds, and just these duck street tacos, just a load of sriracha and olive oil, and cut them into little chunks and put them in a cast iron skillet.
Oh, man.
And, you know, that's my favorite way to prepare ducks.
That sounds incredible.
Yeah.
Always a new light bulb moment for me when we talk about food and cooking it.
Then you take it back to your family, right? And so it makes it's not just an outing you're going to do. You get to go do it and it's all this enjoyment, but then you come back to the house, and for my wife, it's like she gets it now. She's part of it in a way. Like, she doesn't want to get up early and go duck hunting. That's not her gig. She's like, no, I'd rather not. But then we have Morgan and his wife over, right? And we have other friends and family over, and we get to share it. And it just keeps that circle going.
Yeah, that's right.
So then they pick up on it. And that conservation thing just keeps kind of rolling along. The Hank Shaw was big. That's where I learned how to make all that duck sausage we were doing. You know, I had these birds. Man, a lot of people aren't really savvy with what to do with those ducks, or might not like it, right? Because it's got a little bit of an iron taste to it, especially if you cook it too long. Saw one of his recipes and went to his website, like, holy cow. Same deal. He's like, this is just meat. This is how you utilize it. You can do anything from tamales to empanadas, grind it up, make sausage, million ways. You know, make cassoulet with it, boil it down for stock. Now you've got this plethora of stuff to do with it.
That's right.
Instead of, how many poppers am I going to make this year?
And to imagine how far, especially where we are in Texas, how far that duck traveled to end up on your plate. I mean, all the way from Canada and just coming straight south to the bottom of the United States. And I mean, even especially a place like here, if you find
it's incredible
migratory duck, I mean, that's impressive. That's why they have no fat layer by the time they get down here.
That's
right. Pretty friggin' smart.
They have pulled it.
But
yeah, it's impressive.
And think about all the people along the way that are involved in this. So like, we went to Canada last year with the LCAP gang and hunted in Alberta. So you've got pea farmers all over the place and different agriculture that these outfitters are paying to keep those geese and ducks out. They're like, they will mow through this food. So it's their livelihood, but it's helping keep those birds off that'll just crush it. And then the outfitter has something. You know, we get the birds, we get to eat them back at the lodge. We've seen them before they've migrated down here, all those people that are involved. And then as they, you know, hop, skip their way down all the way to here, like you said, all the different farms and the outfitters, gun manufacturers and ammo brands and anybody that's associated with it. And they're vested in it because if it goes away, there goes their livelihood.
Right.
And so they've got a reason to preserve it as much as they can. You know, the farmer, like, please. Like, here, Lube Farms. I mean, think about this. We're going to shoot over all these sunflower fields and stuff, and then when dove season's finally over, they'll plow it up in the next wave. Like this field, right? Sorghum didn't take, ground it up, replowed the fields, planted something new. But this helps them out.
Right.
During a season where stuff might not be grown or as profitable.
Mm-hmm. Farm 400 acres, and that's what we told her at the entrance. You got the best office I've ever seen.
Yeah, right? Sit under a tin roof, watch people come and go.
Bunch of idiots that want to kill doves.
Drive 5 or 6 hours plus.
Oh, my gosh.
You know.
Yeah. At least you had Gunnison in the truck. I was all on my lonesome.
So lamente.
Yeah.
I think, you know, getting down here, talking about 7 years ago as you start, as I started, you know, sort of professionally growing a career and having a family and then sporting endeavors, you know, you try to load up your rig and get out of town, and it's like constantly managing gear. You know, my buddy Tim and I always talk about, like, do you feel like you're just constantly moving gear around? It's like, yes.
So true.
Because it's like your dove hunting stuff and your duck hunting stuff and then your, like, big game stuff and your fishing stuff and your fly fishing stuff. And I mean, it's like
just
tons of stuff and you're constantly moving it around. And that was, you know, this, what I found in those early years is I'd be exhausted from work. And on a Friday, there might be a trip like this. And I'm like, I don't want to do it. I'm too tired. I just want to lay around and watch TV, watch a movie or something, and sleep in, just do nothing and catch up on my sleep. But I'd rally and I'd load all my stuff up, hit the road and drive, and then I'd get no sleep. I'd be totally exhausted by the time I got back. But the energy level that I had from coming back, you know, the excitement of everything I had seen and done and the people I'd been with, that energy would carry me for 2 weeks, way more than catching up on a few hours of sleep, you know?
Right.
Absolutely agree with that.
And so that was sort of the development of Pack Mule, was trying to figure out, like, how do you make it easier to load your gear up and get out of town so that when Friday rolls around, you're not playing Tetris with the back seat. And while in a lot of cases you can get it in there, you know, and you just sort of throw it in, which my wife gives me a hard time about, is, you know, I just will throw it in a lot of cases. I'm not great at organizing because I'm usually, it's last minute and I got 30 minutes to get my stuff and go. But I'd get to the field, and so I'd have all this stuff in the back, and you have a dog kennel and you got a cooler next to the dog kennel. So now the back end of your SUV is filled up, or if you got a pickup truck with it, even with a small toolbox in it, that kind of fills the back end up. And then I'd have my duffel bags on top of the cooler and guns on top of the cooler and shells were all on the other side. And so I was always, you know, you get to the field and it was like a, you know, you were in a garbage can, like just throwing stuff out. It's like free for all. And all of a sudden your stuff's all over the ground and you're trying to organize it out in the field before you can do anything. And it was like, man, this is crazy. And sort of through that process, it was trying to figure out, how do I, you know, make a hitch carrier that is better than everything else that's out there? Because, you know, the reality is you need a cargo carrier because you need extra space.
Yeah.
And all the ones that I'd seen on the market were just small. You can maybe put a cooler on the back. And then once you put that on, you couldn't access anything else. So it was just a dumb idea. It's like, well, now I can't get to anything. I had this thing to help, and it's not really helping me all that much. And so,
Candace, I'm just impressed that you're able to fit 3 Pack Mules on one truck. You got one on the front, back, and then you got Gunnison.
So that's right. Gunnison's a good Pack Mule for sure.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And so, you know, in the beginning, it was all designed specifically just to make my life easier, you know, and I wanted it to be bomb-proof because I'm hard on stuff. You know, if it's 4-wheel drive, it's going to get used.
Right. Yeah, you ought to see that rig over there.
Beast.
If it's it looks like some Baja you'd find.
Beast, man.
I always know when he shows up, I'm like, I don't even have to question. We probably got every tool that I can think of that we might need.
You know you're driving a bad truck if you can hear it before you see it.
Yeah.
That's what it is through these dove fields.
It's pretty rowdy. But in the beginning, it was like, I just need to make it easier to access everything. I wanted it to support me, you know, and I never meant to sell it. And I remember the first dove hunt, I was taking some buddies in Premont with an old guide there. He had this great field, and everybody showed up. It was the first hunt with the OG pack mule, which wasn't a pack mule at the time, right? It was just this thing I had made. And everybody's doing their yard sale with their gear and trying to get organized. And I get out, you know, I hit the button, my lift gate on my Suburban opens. I open the kennel, my dog jumps out. I open the cooler. I got some roto-molded, you know, Yeti coolers on the back, and open it up because I can secure them underneath the lid. I grab a beer, slide my shotgun out. I got easy access to my shells, set them on the cooler. I'm like, hey, guys. And they're all kind of looking at me like, how'd you do that? That was way too easy. Like, you're ready.
It's just flush.
It was flush. And that was kind of the first use was the first push from guys saying, man, I want one of those. You know, where'd you get it? I'm like, well, I just made it. And then we road tripped with the family all through that summer after hunting season. And people were stopping us all the time. Like, man, I want something that's easy like that. Cause you have your dog in the back and you're on a road trip with your family and you get somewhere and you need to let your dog out to go use the bathroom or go get some water. And all the other hitch carriers, you got to take everything off the back to get your dog out. And it's like, that's just stupid. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and getting stuff on the roof. Roof racks look cool and everything, but the reality of putting stuff up there to access it all the time is pretty tough. And you end up with bugs splattered all over your bags and everything. And so when my wife and I, when I was telling her, like, I think I want to make this thing happen. There were basically two criteria. I didn't want to just have another product that was something to sell, you know, like, here, consumer, there's something else that you're going to want.
Right.
I was like, nope, we got to make an impact. And so the conservation piece of it was huge for me, you know, and giving back to conservation, ensuring that there are wild places to explore and see and visit for my kids and for the next kids. And, you know, growing up, you'd hear about all my friends' dads would be like, oh, if you had fished the bay back then, just reds and trout all over the place. You know, now we look at Aransas Bay and some of these other places, and it's hard, you know, the water flow issues and all the other things, and then the pressure on them. It's like, how do you make sure that when Gunnison grows up or his kids grow up, that there are fish and wildlife that's still there? And so giving back to conservation and then being a partner with We Will Not Be Tamed has been really fulfilling as, you know, sort of the mantra of pack mule. And then just encouraging people to load up and go, and all of that stemming from that emotion, you know, where I was exhausted and I didn't want to go somewhere.
Right.
But I'd go, and I was so thrilled by it, and giving people experiences. And, you know, like, if you can make it easy to load your kids up and go to a state park and go visit it and see it.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Texas has so many incredible state parks just here. You don't need to go international or go somewhere else. There's so many amazing places to go see. And we've checked off
different ecosystems, right?
Man, yeah. I've taken the kids. Paladuro Canyon and Big Bend are like incredible treasures that, you know, it's a drive, right?
Yeah, sure.
And so, but when you get there, it is so worth it. And there's something 100%. Alluring about that and sort of magical. And if we can make it easy for people and kind of take away the, oh gosh, it's going to be so much work to pack everything and then work through where it is and try to, where's my DOP kit? It's in here somewhere in this tornado of a back end of an SUV or truck. And
when they don't find it to be a hassle, then they want to go, right?
That's right.
So you take that stress out of it. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh, we'll just load all this stuff up. Like, you know, we're talking about having all that different stuff you need.
Right.
I went to these like bins in my garage and they're all labeled duck hunting, dove hunting, wade fishing, fly fishing, you know, boots.
I love it.
And so, surf, you know, snowboard stuff, and somebody calls like, dude, there's some waves. Run over there. I'm like, I just grab the surf box and it's literally all the surf stuff in there. It's like, shh, throw it in the bed, it could take off.
Oh man, you're way more organized than me, dude.
But I did what Kansas did for so long, you know? I would have to like, go out there and be like, okay, well, towels in here, and where'd I leave wax, and I need to get some sunscreen, and I need a jug to wash off with. And I literally have just got these things and just all packed ready to go, or the dove hunt for this. I went out there like, whoosh, dove hunt box.
That's awesome.
You know?
Yeah.
It's got game bag, it's got camp chairs, wow, and all that stuff.
I'm impressed. I mean, you look at the back of my truck, you don't know if I'm fishing, hunting, or surfing.
Hey,
I don't,
you're ready for everything.
There. Yeah. Everything's there.
And it's not organized at all.
You know, and when it's all chaotic, then you don't want to do it because it's like a stress level. You know, you're like, oh, this is going to take me 2 hours to find all this stuff. And by the time I get on the road, you know, my kids are running around. I got to watch them to get them ready to go. Man, this is a pain. And so if you get more organized and then people realize the access they have in the state, which yep, we've seen, you know, during COVID, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I feel that state parks all have day passes you have to get. Half the time you can't get into a lot of them because people are there. It's That's not right. their fault. It's actually yeah. encouraging.
You're like, yeah.
We are actually full because people have found, I can't travel, I can't check these boxes and do stuff that I might have thought I wanted to do. They're taking it back to nature and like, man, I can drive here, I can be by myself, we can hike, we can bird watch, we can go play on the river, you know, we can fly fish,
mm-hmm.
maybe there's hunting. If you hit that like right time of the year, like there's this whole plethora of stuff they can do. Like you don't have to be a hunter at all.
Right.
You can just want to hike. You can just want to go camp. You might just want to take your kids outside to teach them about packing up their gear, how little we actually need. And then you have like a weekend away where all you did was camp out and cook and play card games. And all of a sudden you take back those conversations. Yep. They get lost when it's easy to throw on a TV when you get home. You know, you're exhausted and want something mindless. It's like, you get rid of that and you've simplified everything. Yeah. You don't have to do it all the time. Like, I'm not saying you have to live like, you know, like you're a native on the land or anything. We're not living that long ago. But you can take the components and realize, man, this is how little I need for enjoyment.
100%.
And you take camaraderie mm-hmm. or family bonds and you enrich it. Like, was this a lot of fun? Cool. Mm-hmm. Now, this is just another option we could do. Say you want to go to a city, go to a nice restaurant. You can do all those things, too. But you know that there are these options of stuff to do. And it's not like, I've got to open this book. Like, what things should we check off when you go to this city? Mm-hmm. Man, you could just go here and relax and then figure out your own stuff.
Yeah.
Maybe playing horseshoes or whatever it could be.
Yeah.
This can be so mm-hmm. simple. And you can always add. So if you can add, like, things are always better, right? You're like, oh, I have all these options to do. But at the end, if you've got that solid structure, like, this is how little I need for enjoyment, everything else is a bonus.
Yeah.
But if we lose the base, which are all these state parks and land yeah. that we have, like, your foundation's gone. Like, good luck with finding those options, what you want to do with it.
Yeah. That's right. I mean, they're during COVID, so growing up in West Bay and Galveston, all the fishing we do is close to Texas Parks and Wildlife has the Dana Cove area right there near like Lake Como. And it was shut down for like 3 or 4 weeks during COVID. I can't remember how long, but you know, when you're there, you're like, oh man, all these people are fishing this marsh that, you know, I grew up fishing. And
yeah,
shoot, those 3 or 4 weeks, I was like, I kind of miss seeing all these people camping and like bringing their kids and bringing in a stringer, yeah. like 3 to 5 fish. Kind of missed them and wanted them back, and it just shows how important it is to, you know, have people out in the water and, you know, catching game. And I don't know, it's just nice to see our community back, so you kind of missed them.
Yeah, absolutely. You think about travel, I can't remember coming back from a summer, you know, you go back to school as a young kid and like, well, what'd you do this summer? Like, well, I went and ate at this restaurant and I went and did this. Like, as a young kid, those experiences are very different from what it does for you and I now, older and developed palates or whatever it could be. You think of like, my best recollections were being down here in South Padre. Like, oh, well, we went fishing and I got to sleep in the boat and then have breakfast tacos when we woke up. Mm-hmm. We'd fish for a couple hours, eventually get burned out. Like, please, we want to go home. We've been out here. You know, my dad loved it so much. My mom would hang with him for a while. It's like, okay, like, the deal is one more fishing spot and then we're going to stop on the backside of the island and go to the swimming hole.
Yeah.
It's like, yes.
Yeah.
Stop and swim. We're going to have to swim in a pool. Like, there is crystal clear water down here because we're not screwing it up because there's still this awesome seagrass that filters it and holds the sediment in. You could swim around. We'd have goggles on the boat. And then go back, eat some fresh trout that we had caught. Those are the things I'd go back and tell people about.
Mm-hmm.
I tell people all the time, the only thing that you really leave your kids at the end is memories.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
You know? And you gotta make the effort to create it.
Yeah.
That's a great point. None of the pictures and all the stuff you really worry about, but memories. I mean, I remember my first hunt. That's the only reason I still do it today, you know, like being with the big guys. We come back to the beginning of this conversation, but just watching like the older guys hunt together and just waiting for that time. It was just some of my best memories growing up.
Absolutely.
And yeah, so from the foundation perspective, I'll ask you, John, so you don't have to ask yourself, but I mean, that's kind of the whole We'll Not Be Tamed campaign, just get people outside, creating those memories. So
right.
What does it mean for you to be ambassador for We'll Not Be Tamed?
Man, I found that as a huge honor. Like, you guys serious with this? I mean, I've seen the likes of the people that they've had as ambassadors in previous years, and I feel that I don't scratch that surface the way they have, but I guess just by passing it and being able to have a voice to tell people, like, you don't have to be in it all the time. Like, you know, they've had really big powerhouses that is their livelihood, is being on the water. And mine, although it is in one fashion, it's not about the hunting industry or the outdoors exclusively. You can partake in it just a little bit. And if you give just that little bit, you're helping. Like, that's an added bonus to it. Because if you don't, there's a possibility we could lose it. So to me, that's why it's so important. That I don't have to shove it down anybody's throat. It's like, look, this is what I do with my life, and I choose to pursue it. And hopefully you find some enjoyment of it. You don't need to enjoy all of it by any means. This is my choice. But if you find something that you thought was enjoyable in that, and you can carry that forward, and then you get involved and pass it, don't be tamed, right?
Mm-hmm.
Don't fall into that cookie cutter, got to live in a box kind of thing, and you don't get to go out and enjoy this because you might be scared of the outdoors. You're like, I've never done it. Man, you see these kind of campaigns, the Stewards of the Wild programs, you're like, just reach out. You know, people will send me messages about stuff. They're like, just share a little bit of insight. Where do you go hunt? Oh, what do I need to know about it? Because it can be overwhelming, right? Mm-hmm. We talk about all this gear you need. It seems daunting to get into it. Find a guide. Find somebody, a neighbor that'll take you.
Right.
You know? And now you bring a neighbor and you've taught them just a little bit about it. If they enjoy it, maybe they get involved. Maybe they teach their kids about it. And off we go down that something that they didn't know about, they hadn't seen before. They've got no reason to protect it because they don't understand it. They don't even know about it. And now you just share your voice and don't beat them over the head with it. Like, you have to love this.
Uh-huh.
Like, no, you don't. If you don't love it, it's not your thing. I can't help you with it.
Right.
You know, I'm hoping that somebody else does appreciate it for whatever little component they like and do just that little bit. Because all of us chip in to make the bigger picture come together. That's why I'm proud to be an ambassador for Will Not Be Tamed. Kansas? I mean.
Yeah, I mean, same thing. Starting Pack Mule was all about making it easy for people to load and go and encouraging them to do that. And then giving back to conservation and then my sentiment about making memories, you know, like if I can help people get outside and find that place to relax. I mean, we're sitting underneath a mesquite tree in a table in a sorghum field right now with some palmettos and life's good, man. There's not a lot of other places I'd like to be right now, but sitting around with some of my buddies and
that's
drinking
it.
Some beer.
Gunnison's out there in the field chasing doves on his own.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, like, man, my wife jokes about it. I'll go in on these hunts and fishing trips. In a couple years, you'll be hauling the kids on it. It's like, then I'm going to be here by myself. Like, well, you could totally come.
Yeah.
You know, this isn't an exclusive thing. You're encouraged. But she's also looking forward to it. And I'm looking forward to it, to be able to get them into the field. She was already asking. She's like, do you think Harper could go in the duck blind yet? Like, you know, I'm giving it serious thought for this. And she's 4, going to be 5. Just don't want to take it too early.
Yeah.
You know, it's cold and then she has a bad take on it. Like, I don't want to be involved in it. And then I've ruined it. She's got this negative connotation. So that's also something you have to consider when you do things with people. That don't take them on extremists. Like, let's go on this 10-day elk hunting trip in the backcountry. You should learn how much to love this. Yeah. Like, this is painful.
You got to take them to the Cadillac blind.
Yeah,
Make it easy that first time.
Make sure they're warm.
That's it. And they've got their proper gear. That's a big one.
Yeah.
Is having the proper gear.
Yeah.
If
you go out in the field and you're wet, you're going to be miserable. You go out into a field and you get cold because you don't have the proper stuff on, it sucks. And then you don't enjoy it. If you don't enjoy it, it goes back to the whole, I don't want to protect this. This is miserable. Why do you guys want to do this?
Man, when I first started my sporting endeavors, you know, I got a shotgun when I was in college and started dove hunting. And, you know, I didn't grow up doing it necessarily, but, you know, in high school, a friend of mine's dad, who's like my father in a lot of ways, I mean, really took me under his wing. He had hunting leases and stuff and would take me to shoot hogs and deer and taught me all about all this stuff, you know. And so then when I started buying my own gear, you know, I bought some of the cheap whatever stuff in the beginning. And I remember the first duck hunt, man, I had some PVC waders, booted waders, and it was freezing outside. And we're going down the intercoastal and we come up to this levee, and then we come over the levee and we hike across this pond to an island in the middle. By the time I get there, I'm sweating so much I'm trying to shed layers at this point. I was freezing earlier. And then my body temperature comes down, and now all that sweat starts freezing, and now I'm just shivering uncontrollably. Mm. All I wanted in that moment was to go get in a hot shower and drink some coffee. Right. I was just like, let's get back to the house. And I remember in that moment thinking, maybe not in that moment, but in hindsight, looking back and going, I took all this time off from family and work and spent money to go here. And then I was miserable and I didn't enjoy it. And I realized having good gear is the difference in enjoying yourself and not enjoying yourself. And, you know, you're there for the experience. Allow yourself to be in that moment and not worried about, my feet are cold or my feet hurt or I'm wet right now or, you know, I'm yard sailing all my gear,
And then that's why you see the ambassadors, also the partners of We Will Not Be Tamed, are these quality brands that are supporting this because they believe in the outdoors, but they're vested in it because they are actively pursuing this stuff. Mm-hmm. They give Kansas Pack Mule, right? Tony Smith with Jarvis Boards, like, he's out there paddling around, like, he's got a reason to protect that water. You know, Rick Chase, the whole Howler gang, like, they all fish. They all go in the outdoors. They have a reason to make a very good product, and they're conscious about what they do with it because they want people to utilize it in the environments that they do. And again, you're encouraging those people to take it out there, heed the call, go do that. Hey, and now I saw it. And now I've got a reason to protect it. And what's this We Will Not Be Tamed I didn't know about? Oh, because I love these brands and they're doing something, so they're giving their voice, and we're just spread it. So that's why it's so awesome that we get together, just chatter about this, and hopefully that maybe one person will find something valuable in this and they'll want to be a supporter of We Will Not Be Tamed. Like, let's keep this stuff protected. We've got an incredible state, incredible foundation that gets behind it, and keep it for Gunnison's generation, for my kids' generation, for Kyle's kids when they come along.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
So,
well, cheers, fellas.
Cheers.
It was a heck of a
weekend. It was.
Enjoyed it.
Appreciate
it. So, everybody, we'll see you later. Hopefully you enjoyed something. Adios.
Brought to you by Texas Parks and Wildlife Foundation, We Will Not Be Tamed calls us all to appreciate the wildness of Texas, the vastness of our Texas spirit, and why we should be inspired to conserve it. Find out more at wewillnotbetamed.org.